This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back-in-stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want, because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, "Hey, I want this, just not right now." Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswym.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt. We're talking fraud today. All right, let me read to you some headlines from the Shopify subreddit, r/Shopify. And I searched fraud and I searched chargeback. 6 days ago, the dumbest chargeback I've ever seen. A month ago, chargeback process is BS. 2 months, have you ever won a chargeback? Is anyone else getting an insane amount of chargebacks? Am I the only one not getting chargebacks in fraudulent order? Chargeback fraud. Just got my first chargeback. Chargeback opened. Anyone else feel like chargebacks are... It just keeps going like that. All right, let's just search fraud for fun. Yeah, multiple fraud orders. Fraud isn't the real problem. Banks are. I owe Shopify $3,000 because of their fraud system. It just keeps going, right? It is a fact of life. If you sell in retail, brick and mortar, online, marketplaces, it does not matter. You will deal with fraud. It is inevitable. It is a matter of time until you experience credit card fraud, friendly fraud, chargebacks, you name it. And our guest today has been a merchant and is now developing a solution for risk identification in fraud. I had a really interesting conversation with him privately about it. I said, "Man, we got to do a podcast about this." And you know, years ago, we worked on his website, E-Bike Gen. So we're joined again today by John Murphy, who formerly E-Bike Gen, some other businesses, and now Freak Labs, which does fraud identification, I believe. We'll find out. John, welcome back to the show. Is it true, in my research notes, it says your first ever sale online was fraudulent?
Yes, that is true, yes. 2 weeks into launching my store, I got my very first order, heard that cha-ching for the very first time, and I got very excited. I was actually at the vet with my dog. Yeah, that's the one. And the phone rang and there was a guy talking on the phone, said he just placed the order and he just wanted to make sure that I was going to ship it really quick. And I was kind of at that stage. It was my very first order. I wasn't even sure how to get my supplier to fulfill the order. I figured I'd figure it out as I go along. So I was really kind of flustered. And it was only afterwards that if it wasn't my first order, I probably would have saw some of the issues. And I remember talking to the guy. He said his name was Jose, and he was putting on an old man's voice. And it was just I was new, and I was just
to try and disarm you.
Yeah, because he placed the order, and then he immediately called me just to make sure that I was going to get it shipped and stuff. And I just wanted to make sure that the order went through, because then for me, that meant proof of validation, proof of concept. It was my first order after 2 weeks only, so it was going to work. And I didn't know what to look for in terms of fraud. And yes, I shipped the bike, and then a couple of weeks later, the real credit card holder got a statement. It said, "I didn't place that order," filed a chargeback, and then the money was gone.
And this was 2017, 9 years ago.
Yeah, July, 9 years ago. Yeah, wow. July 9th.
Isn't that crazy? I don't think Shopify had like the order risk identification, or if they did, it was not like what it is now. And so that in Shopify world, that the standard process is we set payment capture to manual, then use Shopify Flow. This is how I do it anyway. Then use Shopify Flow when order risk analyzed. If it's low, capture the payment, fulfill the order. If it's medium or high, hold for review. flag for review, or you know, you could just cancel it if you want, you know, however you want to handle it. But it let's discuss it. You know, this is open ended. You've kind of become an expert at identifying credit card fraud. Give me the high level overview here.
Yeah, well, I kind of had to because with e-bike generation.
That was your previous store was e-bike gen, and that was doing it 3 million a year.
Yeah, it was averaging 3 million a year. Yeah, and when it was at that type of revenue, I had after I got burnt, I then went and seeked out solutions to make sure it didn't happen again. And there are good solutions out there, but it really depends on you know the type of revenue you're doing and the type of terms you have. And I had started in the Shopify communities, all the rage was Signified was like the go to guys, they were taking 1% of every sale.
I mean, good business to be in where you could just get your hands into every transaction. Yeah, like, man, I'd like to have one of those.
Especially if, like, 9 times out of 10, there's nothing to look at, but they're still getting paid. So it's a good business to be in. But for me, it was peace of mind because I was afraid. You know, I was afraid of getting burnt again. But as sales ramped up, 1% on every order quickly became $3,000 to $4,000 a month in fees. I moved from Signified to ClearSale. Because ClearSale were newer and they were reaching out to all the Signified customers and saying, we can do better than 1%. So they gave me a slightly better percentage. And so I moved to ClearSale just to reduce overhead, but it was still too expensive. It was still like $2,000 a month, $2,000 or $3,000 a month, even with the reduced fees. And I wasn't in a high risk category. I was selling very expensive e-bikes, like in the $4,000 to $7,000 range. So even one was a big problem for me because the deficit for me could ruin my month. So I still needed to find a different solution. So I ended up bringing it I bring it in house. So I had to just find a solution where we could figure it out ourselves and then handle it internally.
And you know, the problem, like the fraud is you're not just out the money, you also lose the processing fees and you lose the product. And so industry average, it's more like you lose $4.50 on every dollar you lose to a fraudulent order. And so like the costs here are exceptionally high. Like, and also it feels awful. It is a terrible feeling to realize like, oh, I got excited about an order and I shipped it quickly because that's what I'm supposed to do. And I was being taken advantage of and didn't know it. It's just a gross feeling.
Yeah.
And, but it's also, it's the reality.
And there is also
exists in the universe.
And even there are more like secondary and third level negative impacts of being frauded, because if somebody on the dark web buys credit card details and then uses them and they're successful, they go back onto those forums and then they share that they were successful on your store, and you end up on an easy prey list for a long time. So if you get scammed once and you don't catch it immediately, what happens is they go, yep, we got it. It worked. The sucker took it, shipped the product. And then all of a sudden you've got a lot of very similar orders. And if you didn't catch it for weeks because the original guy didn't check his credit card statement and didn't flag a chargeback immediately, you could be 4 or 5 scams deep before you realize the first one was a scam. So it can bury you. You know, it can be a real problem. And you have to be super vigilant then for months afterwards, because people are seeing your store on a list and they're just chancing with the details that they have. So it's it can be one, it could be 10 if you don't catch that first one very quickly or avoid it altogether.
Man. And as we know from other research, like it's people in Telegram chats, other places online where they just openly discuss, hey, here's how you commit credit card fraud. They'll even sell it as a service where, hey, you want this expensive product, we can get it for you. And, then they pay like pennies on the dollar for it. And yeah, everybody, they know what's happening, but it's a pervasive problem. So you experienced it as your first transaction. Then you start doing the tool gauntlet. Like you run through all the different tools and all of them work in different ways. And then you found a different tool, Ekata. I had not heard of this. This one sounds like more sophisticated.
Yeah, so Ikata is good because basically you can license the software that banks use to see the information, like to try to piece together what's going on in the transaction. You pay for the licensing fee, you pay monthly, and then you do your own research and you use the tool and you enter your customer's details, and then you interpret then the results, and then you make a decision. I was one of the very first beta users for Ikata when it came out, and I was the first Shopify store to test their API. It didn't actually work and they pulled it, but I was there at the beginning. And then Ikata was sold to MasterCard in 2021. So MasterCard now own Ikata, and it's more like an enterprise tool now. So they don't really look after the small, let's say like the Shopify merchant. They're looking for people with like tens of thousands of transactions and stuff like that. So it's not exactly what it used to be, but the software works very well. I gave up Signifoid and ClearSale, they were guaranteeing something, right? So if they approved an order and it turned out to be fraud, and I had accepted it based on their verdict, they would, in most cases, refund me. Now there is also some fine print in there as well, because they don't just blindly give you back your money. But there is that kind of a additional safety net. With Ikata, that's not the case. You license the information, you license access to the information using their tool, but then the decision is on you. But I was fine with that because we didn't have a lot of fraud. So I wanted access to the information, and then we could just bring it in house. And we started using that for a while, which was good. It still didn't have all, like we still then needed to go off Ikata and then try to get confirmation in other places, like who lives at the address, who owns the phone number, that, because not all of that information was always readily available. So we pieced together different things, and Ikata was the tool that had a lot of the information, and then we just started using like premium white pages in some cases to do some extra research. So we were patching some different tools together on top of Ikata to make it work, and we would do that in-house.
Well, all right. So we've got Shopify's risk analysis tool that just goes low, medium, high. Why was that not good enough?
What the Shopify looks at was like how many attempts were made to get the information, to enter the information correctly on the website at checkout, right? It'll say three attempts made, or the CVV number was incorrect or correct, or it'll say one attempt was made, meaning the credit card worked first time, right? But if somebody bought those credit card details online, the details are correct. They're just not the owner of the credit card entering them in. So that's already, it's already like a pass. But you don't get information on like who owns that number. Is it a burner phone number? Is it a VoIP number? Has the email aged 12 years, or did they create it a half an hour before placing the order? You don't have those type of insights. So,
and you can get that stuff?
I can, yes. My tool can. It's all legal. Don't worry. It's legal. It's just, it's hard to get, and it's hard to package into like one thing. But yeah, that's what we've built. Yeah, a Freelabs.
I've seen so much online fraud that my recommendation would be like, if an order is anything other than the slightest, anything other than totally okay, meaning like it's risk low and there's nothing weird about it, I wouldn't ship it. You know, it's just not worth it. Of course, it depends on what cost of goods sold is.
In my case, what I was selling, I was drop shipping high ticket, so every order counted, because if I sold a bike for $5,000 but my cost was $4,000, and I refuse it because there's a vague indiscretion about maybe the IP, am I leaving?
You're giving up $1,000?
Maybe I am, and maybe I'm not. Well, it's the fact that you don't know for sure, so people are willing to roll the dice and hope it's not, because that could make a difference at the end of the month, right? A couple of those orders. So the problem is that if Shopify says medium, and for good reason, because they detect a VPN or like the IP is hidden by an anonymous IP, that could trigger like a medium flag. But there are plausible reasons for that. for example, this morning I was using a VPN to check something. And the tool I was accessing then said, you know, enter your username and password because it didn't recognize me. So, but because I had a New York IP address just for that exercise I was doing. But there are Apple users that use, that have the anonymous
private relay
settings, right? They have the iCloud relay set up as default. So they're but that triggers at least a medium because that's an anonymous IP because you can't get the location. But that's a plausible explanation for it. But if you don't have context, you're just, you know, it's a medium, but you don't know why it's a medium and you don't know what triggered the medium or high. But having the context, you could say, okay, Shopify says medium, but I see they're an Apple device user and it's going through the iCloud proxy relay, which is explainable. Everything else checks out. So it's not one of multiple red flags. It's one outlier, but everything else is fine. So you can make a more informed decision that way, if you have the context.
This episode is sponsored in part by Zipify. Here's a stat that should keep you up at night. 80% of the people who buy from your store will never come back. They're gone. You get one shot with these customers, one chance to recover what you spent acquiring them, and maybe turn a profit. That's why upsells matter so much. The problem is most upsell apps only trigger after checkout, post-purchase only, which means you're ignoring every other step of the funnel. Product pages, cart, checkout, all of it just leaking money. Zipify's one-click upsell fixes this. OCU lets you place offers before, during, and after the sale, so you're capturing revenue from the moment someone lands on your site to the moment they leave. That's how it's generated over $1 billion in extra revenue for Shopify merchants. It pays for itself, so there's zero risk. 13,000 merchants are already using it. Brands like Victoria Beckham, Lumi, even Cheech and Chong. You could try it free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT.
So what? Why jump to build your own solution? And it sounds like there are other good solutions out there. What's, you know, what made you want to roll your own?
So when I was selling e-bikes and dropshipping, and the margins are razor thin, I was always trying to figure out how do I reduce my cost. And my team had already been trained on what, like Ekata would give some information, and then we'd have to dig deeper, maybe in some other second and third tools. And my team became very good at recognizing what a red flag was or why, or the context of what the meanings were. So we didn't really need to rely on somebody else to tell us whether it was low, medium, or high. We just needed the raw data so we could get it ourselves. And we built, I built a tool that the actual tech stack is not expensive. But like, for example, if I have my own tool internally, I'm not going to increase my prices. My overhead doesn't go up just because I hit a certain threshold of number of searches that month or whatever. I'm in complete control. And if we were rolling the dice based on the information that we were gathering, I may as well, you know, gather my own information and roll the dice that way. So it started off as how do I reduce my costs? Like my margins after shipping were sometimes 8% net margins. Sometimes they were 20% margins depending on the bike, depending on the shipping. So I couldn't, you know, I couldn't afford the luxury of just going, oh, I'm just going to bury that cost and I'll pay for peace of mind. So how do I get better information and all in one place? Because we were paying for Ekata, but then we're paying for like White Pages Premium and some of these public record kind of databases, things. And it all adds up. So I was paying for like multiple subscriptions every month to just get one core decision. So I built a tool that just gathers all of it.
I get the initial call is made by our signals from our traditional fraud service, Ekata. And like that is a very API-based service, enterprisey. And it comes back with, it doesn't make the call for you, but it comes back with the info. And then you're going to classify it as pass-fail. And if it's fail, then it goes through an additional verification steps where we try and like verify who, you know, does name, email, phone, and address all match according to publicly available information.
Yeah, well, so with Ekata, it would just give you, if it will give you information maybe some public record information, but it's not always there and not always updated because it's all third party information. But what it does is it gives you kind of like raw information. It doesn't give you the context of why it's, you know, for example, it could say something along the lines of VPN, yes or no, right? But assuming all VPNs are bad, I know what to do if it says VPN, yes, but that's not the case. So you do have to try to just invest. It's more of an investigation rather than a like yes, no triggers. So
they come back with your transaction risk. Like essentially with like phase one, we determine transaction risk, which seems to be what, you know, all services do. And then you decide what you want to do from there. In this case, and he kind of does digital identity stuff, but it sounds like it, you know, not quite up to date or not quite as good as if you then just went and did additional research.
Well, you still...
I've never used White Pages Premium. You're the first person to ever bring up White Pages Premium as an anti-fraud tool.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Now, and it is a little dated as well, but there's a lot of information in there, you know. But that was just one of those many tools that I would have to go and use as additional either confirmation or like if Ikata comes back with like no information available or something like that, I would then have to go and look for that information elsewhere and find it. And White Pages was one of those things. It was like $20 a month or something. And you could search by phone number. You could search by like reverse address search type of things. And then there are other websites now as well, like itsbeingverified.com or something like that. And then there's another, like, there's lots of these like reverse phone number ones, like spokio.com. And you can see who owned the phone number and that kind of information. So with Ikata, you can get a lot of information. Sometimes it's enough to make a determination, or sometimes you have to then go and use these other tools to try and piece together how confident you are, whether it's a good call or not.
Then once you've compiled this, this is the human step. Are there humans involved in this decision process?
So when I was using Ikata, we were the ones looking at the information and then just making a call, basically. So we were like, my team were used to, you know, understanding the information that we were looking at and then coming to a real world scenario conclusion. Like, is this plausible? Is it a VPN? How long has the email been, like, how long ago was the email created? Has it been seen online? Is the IP a known hub for fraud, that kind of thing? And with all that information, then we're just making a judgment call. So when I decided to, you know, bring it in house and just go and source the raw data and build a tool for ourselves, like Ikata, just with all of the additional information, we already knew what to look for, so we were able to understand what that information was. So, but when I sold eBite Generation, I wasn't using that tool anymore because I didn't immediately go into another business, another e-commerce store. I dabbled in a couple of different businesses. So that tool was just kind of just there. And I've been coaching other dropshippers. So I'm the resident coach for a high ticket dropshipping community. So I see a lot of the things that they need help with. At the beginning of March, one of the ladies in there messaged in the private Slack, and she was like, "Oh my God, help! I just had a chargeback for $4,000." So what? And she was like, "What do I do?" And I said, "Well, was it fraud or was it friendly fraud? You know, or did you piss the guy off or something?" And she says, "Actually, I don't know." And I said, "Okay, so do you have ClearSale?" She said, "No." So what did Shopify say? And she said, "Shopify said it was medium." Well, I don't know what that, like, medium for what. So I said, "Okay, look, send me over, if you don't mind, DM me all of the customer information and I'll run it through my tool and see what it comes back with." And it was just red flags everywhere. So it was clearly fraud. The email had been created the day before. It was a Google Voice number, it was a VoIP number, and it was not associated to anybody. The shipping address, the resident was somebody else completely in a different state. It was just red flags everywhere, but she wasn't privy to that information. So she just rolled the dice and she was in her it was one of her like first sales. She's not getting regular sales. She's getting a few sales a month. So every sale counted. So she was willing to take the sale rather than turn it away. And the credit card holder saw something in a statement and filed a chargeback. And then she subsequently then started getting a bunch of very similar orders that she had to cancel all of them.
You get the first one. This is the pattern we've seen, is like the first one happens and you sell it and then the floodgates open.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it doesn't matter what you sell. It's just like, hey, we're testing and warming up credit cards. And other times you get taken for a ride.
Yeah.
And it always hurts to see.
Yeah. And it was in that moment when I said, you know, well, basically what I did was I ran her sale through my system. And then I just sent her a report. I said, look, the bad news is, you know, this isn't friendly fraud. You can't contest this. It was a legitimate fraud. And here are all the red flags. So unfortunately, you're screwed. And then when I sent it to her, she was like, oh my God, I wish I had this before I, you know, shipped the product. And I thought, I think there's a business in that. So basically then I got.
So you took your own, it went like, hey, I'm not happy with the existing solution. Let's build our own. And then, you know, over subsequent years, evolve that.
Yeah.
And then through this community, through Dropship Breakthrough, you're connected with other folks, recognize the same problem, go to help them out and realize, oh, this could be beneficial to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And really like the adjusting it to then be able to connect to multiple Shopify stores was actually really easy. I went on to ChatGPT and said, I have this problem. How do I do it? I was like, okay. Click here, click here, click there. And now I can connect any Shopify store to the system and we start getting their orders immediately. So it's now I'm helping multiple stores and it's great.
Now we're doing some vibe coding?
Yeah, well, so it's, I guess the system looks like Shopify webhook through make.com. Make.com pulls the information.
People should not sleep on Make. Make is better than Zapier. I think it's better and easier than N8N. N8N's good, but I think I like Make a little better.
I like Make because I experimented with it a few months ago because I was experimenting with something else and I got it to work. And I thought, okay, well, I don't want to go learn a new tool. I'll just use Make again. And it works. It populates everything to Airtable. We have then our tool, which is an internal website that we use to do all the research, populates the tool automatically from Airtable. So it's a nice tool. And with Make, it means I can connect all of the Shopify stores directly into my system. So myself and the other analysts see the orders as soon as they come in. So it's working.
Yeah, I talked at a conference recently. I talked to a guy who had a pharmaceutical online store. It was not on Shopify. But they were selling weight loss drugs, prescription. And in talking to him, man, so a unbelievable revenue, but also so much of it was powered by Make automations, like Make.com scales. It is good. Just for anyone who might be listening going like, well, that sounds sus. Oh, absolutely not. Make's great.
Yeah, no, Make's great. Yeah, and the limits they have, like I've got, like the bandwidth that it allows even on like a small business subscription, like the minimums are huge. Like I'm not going to outgrow Make. So it's a good solution.
So, all right, you've got the service relatively new. Do we have any customers?
Yes. And I got my first customers through Dropship Breakthrough. So I was, because I'm already known and trusted in there because I've been helping guys for years. And I have had my own store. Everybody knew my own store. So they saw what it wasn't just some, oh, guess I started a new business. It was like, they already knew and trust me. So that was my first, I guess, your friends and family network kind of scenario with
friends and family. And then word of mouth is next.
Yeah.
You know, as they have good experiences and they talk to other people in their networks. And then, you know, all right, word of mouth. And then it snowballs from there and you'll get like a better sense of, you know, what works, how they talk about it, what channels they're in. It's fun to watch, but yeah, it's like that initial step of, okay, how do I go 0 to 10? And okay, I got 10 customers. Great. Now how do I go 10 to 50? Yeah. I got 50. And like, why, having done this a few times now, at, you know, 50 is where you start to go, all right, there's something here, and we're starting to get a better sense of like how people are using this, et cetera. And then, you know, on from there, then you just get progressively more comfortable. So this is live now. I want to go into your tactical advice on avoiding fraud. But before I do that, I want you to tell us how we learn more, how we sign up for this.
Yeah, well, so Freak Labs is F-R-I-Q, labs.com. And
Freak sounds better, but Frick. I like Frick.
Frick. Well,
ah, Frick. So it's Frick's what you yell when the fraud happens. Oh, Frick.
Frick, yeah. Like, so Frick is... I like Freak because I live in Italy and it would be pronounced Freak in Italian, and Freak Labs has a bit of a, but so it would be fraudriskiqlabs.com. And so when I was using it internally, we didn't have a name for it. It was just our tool, you know. The name and website is the new concept. So freaklabs.com. And people can sign up there, or they can reach out to me and, you know, hop on a 15-minute call to ask questions, see if it's a good fit. So that's how they can reach out.
I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it, try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks. And all right, I want to get into... just with your experience, I want to get your advice on, you know, what people could do today to avoid fraud in their store. It could be one or two tips, just like, all right, here's something everybody should do in avoiding fraud with a Shopify store.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have auto capture on. Now, obviously, that's not always possible depending on the size of your store and how many units you sell a day.
And settings, payments, we could decide when the order happens, it's authorized, yeah, and then the payment is captured. Do we want payment to be captured always immediately, or do we want to leave it on manual and then either an automation does it or a person does it?
You have 7 days to manually capture a payment, so you've got plenty of time to look at the order. So I normally recommend manually capturing orders after you've taken a good look at it. Couple of reasons, because like if you set it to like medium or high auto cancel, there are good valid reasons why they could be plausible explanations for those false red flags. And also
no one wants to give up legit orders, and no one wants to cancel an order on someone who's like, hey, I just wanted to buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. And even just yesterday, somebody from Dropship Breakthrough was in Slack and they said, hey, so I just found out that ClearSail auto canceled one of my orders and it was for thousands of dollars. So now I have to go back to the customer and ask them how to place the order again. How do I turn that off? And it turns out there's a setting inside of ClearSail, whereas if it's marked as high risk, ClearSail automatically cancels the order on you. So you, like they took the, you know, they take the decision for you. So she didn't realize that was turned on and she, you know, lost the sale. Now she has to try and convince the customer that, you know, our fraud department, you know, accidentally, you know, red flag triggered a feature, but she said it was a completely legitimate order and that she needed the customer to then place the order again. It shouldn't have happened. And then she had to go figure out how to turn off those settings. So I like the manual approach.
All right, that one's a false positive.
Yeah.
And for sure, false positives happen. What are the, give me 1 to 3 red flags that should make you always cancel an order.
So, I would say it's usually when they all happen together. So each red flag is justifiable in every day, right? So if it's usually it's like the trifecta, let's say, when it seems to be a combination of them all happening on the same order, that's when it's a red flag. So generally, if a phone number doesn't come back to the person or at least the family member, that's a red flag, because people are not going to put the bill payer's actual phone number on the order because, you know, they could get SMSs or notifications or a call about the order that they didn't place on their credit card. So there'll usually be like a burner number. And that's usually a big red flag. And then if the email, if there's like a Gmail account that was literally just created that day, and this was the first time it's been used online, that's also a red flag.
How do you check? Like, I know you could, it's easy to see like who owns a phone number. So you can tell it's like, oh, this is owned by T-Mobile. All right, fine. If I Google the phone number, there's plenty of services that'll be like, this is the carrier that owns this. And so I could tell if it's VoIP.
Unfortunately, only my tool and the Ekata can get that information. I don't know of another service that you could just sign up for, like Spokio or one of these places, one of these websites that actually tell you when an email was created. I haven't found another tool that does that.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
That's it.
That, you know, obviously, it's like if the email exists online.
Yeah.
In Google, like you could Google it, you know, just put it in quotes, see what comes back, and if it exists, you know.
Yeah.
Years ago, okay, like you know that one is probably real unless it's a hacked account or it's friendly fraud. But that, like, if nothing comes up, well, that just means they may not be very active online. It doesn't mean it was just created.
Yeah, or they don't post it publicly. It's not on a Facebook profile. It's just private, and most of them aren't. Like if you Google an email, if it's on an About Us page because it's a business email or something like that, you know, you can find it. Or sometimes you might find like an Instagram page with the email account public. But a lot of time that information isn't online. If you Google it, like a Gmail account, it's often not there. With my Freak Labs tool that we use internally, we can see the day that the email was first seen online, and we give that information when we submit the report. So the client actually sees the very first time that email was used online, and if it was first seen today, that's a big red flag. So if the phone number isn't registered to the person that placed the order, or at least the family member, that's a red flag. If the email is brand new, that's a red flag. But unfortunately, most people aren't privy to that aspect. The shipping address and billing address, if they don't match, you know, that's something to look deeper into. Reverse, like, you know, there are platforms like Premium White Pages or some of these platforms like Spokio. .com or,
you know, I stuck my cell phone number into Spokio and it came back and it was like, all right, you got to buy this record for 95 cents. And it claimed to have everything, but it did as proof show a screenshot of my damn house, like the map. I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely my address. And so I'm like, all right, let me just go ahead and opt out of this bad boy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can do that, and you can also reverse address. You can reverse search an address to see if it's registered to somebody. There's any public records. Some states have really good public records online, and you can actually find who's.
Yeah, Illinois does with house sales. It's a problem.
Yeah, so I've used a few of those sometimes.
I once had a concerned email subscriber. It was like, in your video, I could see like the corner of your house number, and you know, Googling it, I was able to figure out your address immediately. And I was like, well, you know, my neighbor's a cop, and I own a gun, but. In Illinois, like, I own my house and I didn't buy it through an LLC. So in Illinois, it's just public record. I don't get a choice there.
Yeah.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. So like somebody that has time to kill that, or like a VA that's doing this type of work, they can go and piece together a lot of the information from different locations, different public records, public sites, other aggregate sites. And you can get like a good idea. The email first seen thing isn't generally available. But if the shipping address is different, you can reverse address the address to see who actually lives there and if there's a connection. If it could be a family home, it could be an office. Like just yesterday, I ran a review for a guy who was shipping it to his address, to his work address. So billing address said one thing, and billing was registered to the customer's name. That checked out, but they were shipping it to somewhere else, and that somewhere else wasn't a home, and his name wasn't associated. But the address was a Volkswagen, like, used car dealership. And I went to the website and I went to About Us, and there was a Meet the Staff section. I went to the service department, and this guy's name, his face, his business email were all available on the About Us. And I was like, okay, he's shipping it to his work because that's where he spends most of his time during the day. So, you know, the shipping address checked out. but the other aspects checked out as well. So
some of this fraud avoidance is really doing a little bit of internet sleuthing. You're a private investigator here.
You have to be an investigator, and you have to understand what all the signals mean. And there are a lot of false reds. Like, my wife travels a lot. She's never home. I work from home a lot. And my wife orders a lot of stuff online and always leaves my phone number because the courier is going to call me or call and say, okay, I'm on my way. Are you home? Because I have a package and we live in the middle of nowhere. So they're not going to come into the countryside if they know that there's nobody home. But if somebody was to check my phone number, John Murphy, an Irish name, and my wife is an Italian with a very Italian name, and Italian women don't necessarily take the husband's name in marriage because they have to then get a whole new, you know, social security numbers and stuff. It's complicated. So her name is one thing and my surname is completely different. And they're distinctly two different nationalities. It's really obvious. So that would be a massive red flag, but it's plausible because that's just how my wife shops online. So you have to recognize the red flags, but then try to understand the context behind it. And are they stacking up? Is it a brand new email? Is the phone number somebody else? Is the shipping address somebody else altogether, not related? So it's usually a combination of all these things, but then it's, okay, this is definitely a high-risk order. But one of those things isn't necessarily a high risk, but they will flag in systems like Signify, ClearSale, Shopify, because there's some legitimacy to it.
As we're wrapping this up, let's say I've got a store, I'm doing 50K a month. So I'm like, I'm early, you know, but I'm not huge. I haven't hit a million a year yet. What should my fraud stack look like? You know, like I'm on a DIY shoestring budget here. Give me the free cheap version and, you know, a tip that'll save me.
I would do some back of the napkin maths and say, okay, ClearSale and Signified is peace of mind and you lose 1%. And in a good scenario, they will refund you if it turns out to have been fraud and they proved it. So that's a kind of a good, I pay the fee, I can absorb it and I don't need to think about it anymore. So that's kind of like the safest peace of mind scenario that you can do. And then after a certain amount of revenue each month, that 1% will eventually become many hundreds, if not a few thousand a month. And that's when you start looking for another option. So like, and one of those options would be free clouds, for example. Whereas we actually, like if somebody was to then go the Ekata route and pay a few hundred dollars a month for the software, and then they train somebody in to understand what, you know, the context behind the information. So somebody becomes the fraud analyst in their organization. That would be an evolution of the process. Or you then use a service like Freak Labs where we're the analysts and we give you a report identifying whether it's, you know, low risk, medium, or high risk with the context behind the medium and behind the red. And because I've built e-commerce stores since 2017 and run this, and my analyst is also has been using it from my previous store, we're well versed on what the next steps would be. So we also give instructions on, here's what we recommend because there's a concern about this one aspect, but here's how you could dispel that specific aspect before shipping. And here's what our recommendation would be. So it's not just a green, orange, or red result. We give context and then recommendations in our report for each order. So, and we're more.
Have you ever used Shopify Protect? So Shopify has a landing page for this, you know, shopify.com/protect. Fraud sucks, fight back. Activate your force field against fraud with ShopPay's free built-in chargeback protection. And then there's a big asterisk at the end of that statement. Because of course there is. And do you have any experience with this? I don't.
Never even heard of it. I guess it wasn't around when I was running e-bike gen. And
it may be US only. Was e-bike gen based in the US?
It was a US business, yeah. Yeah, it was I registered in Delaware. Yeah, so it was a US business.
Yeah, it's like we cover, Shopify Protect covers total order cost. They cover chargeback costs. Fulfill without fear. I have not particularly played with this.
Yeah, no, I've never heard of it.
Huh.
It could be new. Like ShopPay itself isn't very old. That hasn't been around for a very long time. Right, it's probably come
after. Yeah, this, well, and this is like, it is part of that. Like, you have to be using Shopify payments. It's got to be a US-based store. So yeah, lots of options. I mean, I think at the very least, make sure you are not just blindly capturing orders always and fulfilling them, because when the wrong person figures that out, they're going to take advantage of it as a loophole. And so, like, you need to be able to stop it. Any, like, one single takeaway piece of advice, thing you wish everyone would do?
Well, I was doing some research on for some of the numbers, and I saw that Bank of America released a report that said that in 2025, global e-commerce fraud had exceeded $50 billion that year. And by 2029, it will exceed $107 billion a year. So do something, whether it's ClearSale or Signify it or Ikata, and train an analyst to read Ikata, or use a service like Freak Labs. Do something. Don't blindly capture payments and ship. And just be curious about what's going on behind the order, because just a little bit of more like curiosity about what's going on could avoid massive repercussions. Because when you get one chargeback and you don't know for a couple of weeks, but they know they got away with it, you could be targeted big in a very short amount of time, because everybody wants to strike while the iron's hot. So be vigilant and be curious about, you know, those orders, and you could avoid lots of pain.
Be curious about those orders. I think that's good advice. I like that. You know, when we have to find, when researching info about a guest or a prospective client, we call it look 'em ups. Like, hey, look 'em up. Go look 'em up. I borrowed from Righteous Gemstones. I really love that show. But yeah, I like the idea of look 'em ups. And in the past, you know, with other clients, they've had unusual orders. And sometimes they'll be like, hey, Kurt, take a look at this. What do you think? And then you do a little bit of research. And sometimes you discover, like, oh my gosh, this customer is someone famous or someone really interesting. Or it turns out they're just like super into your brand and willing to blow disposable income on it. And so you're like, hey, there's an opportunity there. Reach out to that person. You know, a few times when we're suspicious of an order, we discovered it wasn't fraud. It was like the most perfect customer in the world. And so I appreciate your approach of like, hey, you know, don't just blindly cancel everything that doesn't fit the perfect safe risk profile. You know, go the extra step, do the research, look them up and try and figure it out. There's lots of options here. Lots of ways to go about this.
A good example of this even is just 2 days ago, one of my clients, she sells porch swings, built by the Amish community. A fantastic product, really, really cool. Really cool. And she got a sale, and because the shipping was, the email was a business email, I went and I did some digging outside of my tool. I went to the website and see who it was. And it turned out to be like a garden exterior excavation company. I thought, oh, that's interesting. If they bought one, maybe they've got a project. Maybe they will have multiple projects, similar projects. So in my report, in my notes, I said, hey, I also noticed, side note, that this guy renovates gardens for a living. So maybe it's a good contact to have, because if he's not on your radar now, it could be a good contact to have. And store owners can get that kind of insight just by being curious as well. So it helps.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. John Murphy, where do we go to learn more about you?
Freaklabs.com. That's FRIQLabs.com. That's where I'm at now. And they can reach out to me and they can talk to me. They can fix some time with me, or they can sign up right there on the homepage.
That's, we will do that. Hey, did you know you could, then well, I'll stop the recording. Did you know you could buy Freak Labs, FREAK.com, for a mere $10,000?
Oh, wow. I'm glad I didn't go looking for that one. Yeah.
I know. Every time I'm like, I got a brilliant brand name idea. I got a brilliant domain name idea. I was like, all right, well, I don't $10,000 like it.
Yeah, I do. I do that at least daily. I'm checking. I wonder if the domain is available, and it never is.
John Murphy, thank you so much.